मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू फटेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hi, this is the Talking Stuff Network and you're listening to Attention Please Podcast. We are on episode 30, recorded on the 23rd of February, India time. Last week's episode resulted in a lot of conversation on what should and shouldn't be done with respect to Pakistan. And here to add a bit more to that conversation and to talk about some other things is your host Arnab. Hey Arnab, great debate going on about last week.
Yes. If I was my namesake Arnab Goswami, I would claim credit for actually starting this conversation. I am not just because I'm not Arnab Goswami, but I'm realistic about my reach. But it is true that, for Your Honor, it is true that many of the things that occupied the headlines of last week were, at least we mentioned those things before they became headlines. In the sense, for those of you who did not listen to last week's podcast, and I strongly encourage you to do so if you haven't, one of the things that I'd said at that point of time was I didn't feel that just a kind of military response in order to make people feel good was really the way out. I'm not a peacenik, but I'm very much in favor of understanding what we can achieve through any kind of military strike, because a military strike is, and I recognize that fact, it's not just an expensive thing for in terms of the national exchequer, but it is expensive in terms of lives lost. And it is contingent upon a nation that when they send their finest to die, that there needs to be an objective, a definite military objective, which should be something which is definitely more concrete than the amorphous kuch to karna padega. You can't expect people to lose their lives because kuch to karna padega. That cannot be the reason that why even a single person should lose his life. So I had proposed in the last podcast that one of the things that we could do, and I want to kind of elaborate on it because I've kind of heard a lot of feedback on it, so I just wanted to follow up that story. So what I had proposed was that at the very minimum, we refuse to play Pakistan in this World Cup, which is coming up in 100 days. And this was the easiest thing for us to do. And I think this would be perhaps be the most, again, this would be the easiest thing to implement. I think it's too late to place before the ICC. It's either you play with India or you play with Pakistan. I think it's too late for that. There are a lot of friendly countries in the ICC, and that would be a little petulant at this stage. But we can definitely refuse to show up for a Pakistan game. But moving forward, that should be the long-term Indian strategy, which is to isolate Pakistan in the cricketing world, in the sense that countries in the Future Tours program will have to make a choice whether they will choose Pakistan or whether they will choose India. And I'm pretty sure it's not a moral question, but purely from the amount of money that the home boards make from an India series, they will all side with India. This has got nothing to do with a moral choice. I'm absolutely pragmatic about that. But this was really what I had proposed, was India has, in this day and age, military victories in the way that we have thought of or read of in history books. You can't get those kinds of military victories. The US hasn't been successful in getting those military victories either in Afghanistan or in Iraq. And it's very, very, it's impossible with a nuclear-armed Pakistan for us to get even something. And I don't think nobody thinks that the U.S. won the war. Actually, they drained the country, not just in terms of lives lost, but in terms of what it did to the U.S. economy. So in this day and age, we have seen that the way warfare is done has drastically changed. We have information warfare. We have hacking warfare. We have cyber warfare. And Putin just showed that it's possible to defeat a superpower without firing a single bullet, if you can use your head. Now, allegedly, but there is no doubt that there was Russian interference in the US elections in terms of not just hacking into DNC, but also in terms of the strategic leaks that were orchestrated through WikiLeaks and in terms of the false information and propaganda campaign that was carried out by a huge number of spurious pages which purported to be based in US but were actually in Russia. So the point that I'm trying to say is that the really intelligent or evil, or however you want to put it, the real masterminds nowadays no longer fight wars with tanks and missiles. They fight much more effective wars with other means. Now, in this case with Pakistan, the reason why, and after we had this discussion, that India imposed high import duties on Pakistani imports. They took away their most favored nation status, which I don't know, Vikram, but I was surprised they still had it. I mean, what did they need to do in order to lose most favored nation? I thought they had crossed that line many years ago.
They had it during Kargil.
Yeah, they still had it during Kargil. So this is also another thing which I said, that there are a lot of people, a lot of powerful people who gain from trade with Pakistan. They're directly invested in profiteering from it, which is why something like this has been kept off the table. There is a reason for that. You would have thought that this would have been, there would have not have been an MFN for a long time, but that was evidently not the case. But here also, I believe that the problem with something like imposing tariffs in a globalized economy is that ultimately this is not going to affect Pakistan a lot. Okay, it might affect, it's going to, and Pakistan is going to find another buyer for their product. Their profits might decrease, might not, might even increase. So this might cause some kind of disruption in the short run. Ultimately, this is a gesture, which is a gesture. I'm not saying it should not be done, but ultimately it's not going to have a lot of impact. Now, with respect to cricket, it's a little different because cricket is not, free and fair market. There are only a few countries which play it. It has an inordinate impact on the Pakistani national psyche, just as it has on India. So I wouldn't say this if this was about volleyball or squash or even hockey. It's specific about cricket. I mean, I'm saying that we cease sporting contact with Pakistan, but the impact would be felt in cricket. It's not in the other sports. Because here's the thing, Pakistan can't take its business elsewhere. There is no alternate ICC. And Pakistan just doesn't have the financial muscle to do a Kerry Packer and create an alternative. The only person who can do that in this day and age is India. There's no other country which can do it. Someday, perhaps Bangladesh might be able to do it, given the popularity.
We have actually an interesting question on this topic. It came in on WhatsApp. So somebody's asking, how did the sporting world come together in the past against apartheid, and why are things different now?
Because apartheid was seen to be a crime against humanity in general. It was something which everybody, there was nobody who could, first of all, it was something which was undeniable. One of the things that Pakistan has always kept is this deniability. There's always this, but they might be in Pakistan, but we don't know they're in Pakistan, which they played with Osama bin Laden, which they play with Dawood Ibrahim. With South Africa, unfortunately, they couldn't pretend that there was no apartheid, given that it was part of their legal system.
Official, yeah.
So they couldn't deny that it was going on, or they just couldn't say, oh, we don't know. So Pakistan has that fig leaf, and that fig leaf is important because this might sound dramatic, but Pakistan does have, unlike India, which doesn't have its supporters anywhere in Pakistan, Pakistan has a lot of supporters in India. And I will not use the word anti-national because of the way it's overloaded, and because I think it's become a dog whistle for violence. So I will not use that. It's not a question of, but there are people in this country who choose to believe Pakistan than they choose to believe their own government. That's unfortunately true. And this becomes even more true when you have a BJP government. I see that there are people who will give Imran Khan the benefit of doubt, but they will not give Modi the benefit of doubt. They will say that the surgical strike is made up, but they will say that Imran Khan is a good person. So this stems, in a way, it stems from, I think, some part of it is because it's Imran Khan, because a lot of us, at least our age, we grew up seeing Imran Khan in a very different context. We've grown up idolizing him, and I say this as a fan of Pakistani cricket, is again something which I said last time, that this is something which is personal to me because I love cricket. So when I'm saying that we shouldn't play World Cup, I understand what it means. And I'm also a huge fan, even just leaving aside, I'm a huge fan of Pakistani cricket. I have followed PSL. I can tell you about 20 names of Pakistani cricketers who you would not know, who kind of still in the, because we don't know a lot about the Pakistani team anymore in the way we used to know in the 90s. So I still follow a lot of Pakistani cricket. I know who Usman Shinwari is. I know like the, who they're, you know, Shaheen Shah, Afridi, they're the new players. They're very exciting players. But so I actually like the Pakistani team. But I still say that as an Indian, and given what's happened, that this is something which unfortunately we have to do. But coming back to your original question, Vikram, is that first of all, there was what South Africa's doing was perceived as a crime against the world. Now, again, there were people in, like, for instance, Margaret Thatcher, who was not really for apartheid, who was not for imposing a ban, on South Africa. There were rebel tours which were organized, who went and played in South Africa and in England. And there was a lot of popular support in England for those people who were going and playing there. So it was seen as, okay, because of the EU, because of the predominant world opinion that England had to impose sanctions on South Africa, but there was a significant amount of people, including Margaret Thatcher, who felt that this was a little bit too far. So even there, it wasn't as if the world was perfectly united. But it was united. Yeah, so it was united to a certain. So if you read some of the books that, there's a very good book that Jeff Boycott wrote. So there was a split even in the English team. There were a lot of people who were more conservative in terms of politics, who felt that this was too much. And there were those who were, even in the English team, who were kind of communists. So two of the biggest communists that they had, one was Bob Willis and one was Ian Botham. So those two people were like absolutely against apartheid and any kind of contact with South Africa. But there were a lot of people who were kind of mixed, had kind of mixed feeling. And they used the exact same kind of logic, by the way, that peaceniks in India do, that sports and politics should not mix. It was the same logic. That, you know, what does Graham Pollock have to do with apartheid? Or what does Barry Richards have to do with it? Have you seen Barry Richards' bat? He's the greatest batsman in the world. Which is true, but that's neither here nor there. It was true that Barry Richards was the greatest batsman of their era, basically somebody who didn't even play. And the Pollocks, you know, we've seen their nephew. But, you know, they were also great players. It's not a question of whether they were great players or not. South Africa was a fairly good team in those days. It's always been a very good team. If you let them play, they're always a very good team. But it was something else. So the point is, there was still, it was not uniform. But yes, there was far more greater consensus. With Pakistan, Pakistan's problem is not with any other country. It's only with us. So why would any other country, unless we apply diplomatic pressure, why does it matter to any other country? How does it matter to Canada, for instance, what Pakistan does? Nothing. There's nothing that Pakistan is doing against Canada. So in a way, I think this is a lone battle that India has to fight. And as I had said in my last podcast, that this is not the 90s or the 80s that India was just like Pakistan, that in India and Pakistan could be hyphenated together. In those days, that was the thing. They were hyphenated together. In the middle, in the 90s, it was the first time that people began to dehyphenate India and Pakistan. It wasn't just, those two guys who fight against each other. We kind of separated ourselves from Pakistan in terms of, you know, our economy, in terms of, you know, the IT sector, in terms of how we are perceived in the world, that we became from a country with snake charmers and, you know, monkeys and caste system. We became, you know, the stereotypes changed from that to a country which is an IT superpower. It changed for the positive. And Pakistan could never do that because it chose not to. I didn't say Pakistan couldn't do it. They chose not to do it. They chose to do exactly what they had been doing. And that it's their choice, but we are at a place where we can take advantage of that. So again, I think a cricket ban is visible. I mean, here's the reason why I feel a cricket ban is essential and why not playing Pakistan and steadily making it an us versus them is one of the things that we can do. It's first of all,
much of foreign policy is about emotion. If you stop the import of onions from Pakistan, there is no emotion about it. Nobody really cares. Nobody's going to discuss this over social media. Oh, my onions are not coming from Pakistan. Okay, this is not something which people can get emotional about. There's no buzz about this, even positive or negative buzz. Cricket, on the other hand, for good or for bad, it's always in the headlines. It's always in the news. And by doing that, India wants to show the world that it means business. Because here's something which I have never been able to understand. How can we ever convince another country or another person that Pakistan is fomenting terror inside India? We're accusing them of all sorts of heinous crimes, and yet we play cricket with them. This has virtually never happened in the history of the world, where two enemies one enemy is claiming to be that this other country is doing terrible things to us. But hold on a second, the toss is starting, let's go and watch the cricket match. You see, this can't go on. The moment you do this, forget everything else, nobody's going to take you seriously. They'll think it's like a rivalry between two colleges, that's all. And much of what India is saying itself doesn't believe it, that it's just saying it for its own domestic consumption. But they go and play cricket anyways, right? So this is very important, that we need to show the world that a line has been crossed, that we have kept on playing cricket, we have gradually phased down our cricket interactions, and that's a good thing. We're not cutting it off like we were playing series and everything, and then suddenly turn our head around, and this has been going on for more than 10 years now, that we have kind of been detaching. And now we have stopped touring Pakistan. We toured Pakistan in 2004. And it's almost been 15 years that we toured Pakistan, if I'm not wrong. And now is the time to take it to the next step, that, we've seen this for 15 years. Things haven't gotten better. Things have gotten worse. So now it's time to, take it up a notch. And when I tweeted it, I got assailed and abused by Pakistani people. Okay, and I'm nobody.
Right.
If I had said stop onions being imported, I'm pretty sure nobody would have engaged with me. But the fact is, they themselves are scared. They themselves know where this is going to go. Intuitively, they know what we are talking about. Because Pakistan has suffered. I, again, as a fan of Pakistani cricket, and sometimes having perhaps too much time on my hands, I've seen YouTube videos where they discuss the decline of Pakistan cricket. And one of the points that come up, and these points are being raised by people who are not big fans of India. Okay, none of their cricket players, ex-cricket players, are big fans of India. Let's all agree to that. But they keep on saying this one thing, that Pakistan cricket hasn't advanced because of the way we have been isolated from the world. We can't play home series, and we cannot participate in IPL. That the reason why India, because India always comes up, because they always compare themselves to India. I think the persistent question is, and they're right, we used to be a better cricket team than India in the 90s. Why are we not that anymore? And they ask the people who used to be the better players in the 90s. And their main thing was, because one of the big reasons is because IPL has been going on for 10 years now, has brought in this huge revolution in the way the Indians perceive the game. It's created a new generation of players. They discuss, the contribution of Ganguly. They discuss the contribution of Dhoni. They have had these impactful leaders, and they, in contrast, bring up Misbah-ul Haq, and they say, but we never had, we kind of dropped even Imran Khan, Wasim Akram. We had leaders, and then we went to Misbah-ul Haq. Okay, so. So we never really had the leaders, while India had all these leaders, they had everything. And so India has marched ahead. And none of them will say, and they're very jingoistic in the extreme, but none of them say that they're a better team than India anymore. They all accept, we're not a better team than them anymore. We used to be at one point of time. And that's absolutely true. They used to be. There's no doubt about it. They were light years ahead of India in every respect of the game, whether it be batting. I would say batting also, because they could finish games, which we couldn't in the 80s and 90s. They had,
fielding.
Except fielding, we were more or less similar. But bowling, there's no comparison in terms of the bowlers they had and the bowlers we had. I mean, ashamed to say that. I mean, they had a great bowling attack. the greatest bowling attack. I would put their bowling attack even better than the best Australian bowling attack. It's just that they were so infighting and with bookies that Pakistan, you don't know which Pakistan would show up. But if you look at the individual players, player by player, they were better in the bowling side. I mean, there's no comparison to Wasim Akram. It's just Wasim Akram basically takes the cake. He's just, for me, the greatest bowler that I have seen, bar none. So coming back to that, they don't get Wasim Akrams anymore in that country. I think Wasim Akram is still perhaps the best bowler in Pakistan. Another thing which I want to mention this time is, Sachin Tendulkar. Okay, now you see, I love Sachin Tendulkar, or perhaps I loved like everybody of my generation, but over the years, as Sachin Tendulkar's cricketing abilities has receded and he has become more of a politician and a personality, I have become increasingly disappointed in him in terms of his reactions, in terms of his silences. I mean, he has this, because of his iconic nature, he can do a lot of things. And I think some of the work that he should have done is done by the Rahul Dravids of the world and the Saurav Gangulis of the world. Sachin Tendulkar just seems interested in, I don't know, the soft part of being a celebrity. And he came up with this absolutely, to my mind, ridiculous statement, which was, let's get 2 points. Now, I'll say why this is ridiculous for two reasons. So I tweeted that this was the time when I wish that Rahul Dravid had just pulled his mic, like the 194 declared. And you've not let him finish his sentence. Just the feedback from the mic. Somebody's pulled the power cord from the mic, as he did once. So this is okay. So first of all, I don't know why. I understand why, but the first is the matter is the principle. We're not talking about 2 points anymore. Okay. So the fact that you're even thinking of 2 points when more than 40 people have lost their lives. I mean, that's where the problem is. And I'll hark back to what I said last time. How can you expect any person to lay down their life for you when all you can think of is 2 stupid points in a cricket tournament? I mean, how can you even say that? Now, I can understand some guy on Twitter saying this, but Sachin Tendulkar, Rajya Sabha MP and resident god, saying this, I mean, has he lost his absolute mind to even talk about 2 points? I mean, how that doesn't even compute. I mean, he has to be, again, he's free to have his freedom of speech, but we can also expect his speech to reflect the stature that this country gives him. And I'm not talking about whether he was anti-national. I don't think this is anti-national. This is just being clueless at this point of time.
Arnab, maybe there's a Sachin fan in me coming out, but I disagree with Sachin on this point. But I mean, for somebody for whom the world was cricket and the World Cup was everything, I kind of see his point that I can kind of see why he can't think beyond this and look at, as cricket as just another thing.
Wait, he's a Rajya Sabha MP. He's a Rajya Sabha MP. He has to think. He's not an ex-cricketer trying to make his living by doing commentary. He himself voluntarily has taken a post which at least makes him, I know that, Sachin Tendulkar's attendance, at parliament is comparable to my attendance at gym, but that is he's taken the responsibility himself voluntarily of expanding from his role as a cricketer to a person of the country, okay, as somebody, as a senior person who's not really a politician, but as a wise man, right? He's decided to take that role. Dravid hasn't taken it, Harbhajan hasn't taken it, Yuvraj hasn't taken it, he's taken it. So can't I expect that he, given the fact that he's not 16 years old anymore, that he's also, a fairly mature guy who I hope is intelligent, that he now puts on a different hat while talking, realizing that he is not just an ex-cricketer, that he's also a member of the governance structure of India, an official member of the governance structure of India. Is he still an MP? Is he still a Rajya Sabha MP?
I was actually googling that. I'm not sure. I think he is.
Okay. If he is, then it's even worse. But he was. Like, we all know that he was. He should be, I think, still. But here's the second reason why I think this is even worse. Is that, first of all, what is Sachin trying to say here? That 2 points... Why is he saying that we're going to get the 2 points? Now, here's really where... So here's where I think this is almost dangerous, what he's saying. And this is not the, he's not the only person saying it. A lot of people are saying it on Twitter too. But I'm kind of calling him out on it because, again, I hold Sachin to a higher standard than some random guy on Twitter. Is that on the way he's presenting it is that, you know, why should we lose 2 points to Pakistan? First of all, we don't know we'll be winning those 2 points against Pakistan. Okay. So it's not a question of losing 2 points to Pakistan. We're going to get into a game which is going to be 50-50. And what he's doing is he's putting this enormous amount of pressure on India.
Exactly.
He's making this is where my problem is. I feel that sports is political. For everybody who says that sports and politics don't mix, I'd say please go and read up your history. Sports and politics have always mixed. Okay, whether they should or not doesn't matter. It's always mixed. From the Black Power salute to Hitler's Olympics, to apartheid, to India not playing South Africa in Davis Cup. This is, sports and politics have always gone together. Whenever somebody says sports and politics don't mix, it's really what he wants to say is, I don't believe enough in this politics for it to affect my sports. That's really what he's trying to say. Except he says it in a much more general and in a disingenuous way. So I totally believe that sports and politics are linked, movies and politics are linked, anything is linked to politics. But here's where I feel that they shouldn't mix, in the sense that sports should never be taken as a surrogate for war. That should never happen. This is unfair to the sports people, and it is essentially putting fire on dry leaves. Okay, what happens if India loses? The way it's being hyped up and we end up playing and we lose. What do you think is, first of all, under what pressure will those cricketers be playing that game? Okay, they do not deserve that. There's no way. And what if India lose? Then what happens at that point of time where you have publicly essentially made it as, those are 2 points which are meant for asking. It's like Mauka was one thing. It was a star plus thing. This is a political thing. Okay, we are raising the expectation that those points are there for the taking. Now, what happens if we lose those 2 points, which can definitely happen? Now, I know that, and nobody will say that Pakistan is a better team than India, but it's a cricket game. Anything can happen. So, what happens then? You see, at this point of time, forget everything else. It's important that we keep the emotions out. I was in 99 when India played Pakistan during the height of Kargil. You know, I have pictures. All my friends, they came over to my house. We all watched the game. We had a great time. This was 99. I was years younger. And of course, we took it as war. And fortunately, India won. I don't think I have to repeat what happened in 96. But in this day and age, the way the game is being hyped up by Sachin of all people, if Sachin hypes it up like this, if Sachin is saying those 2 points are there for the taking, what do you think, what kind of message does it give to the normal Indian cricket fan, especially in terms of what might happen if India don't win that 2 points? Let's say if India still chooses to play Pakistan, which I believe is the most likely situation. So, Vikram, with respect to what you said, Sachin should at least have seen this, having been a person who's participated in India-Pakistan games.
Yeah, and this is how you get mobs at the outside the cricketer's house.
Yes, this is...
By inviting it for yourself.
Exactly. That is what I'm afraid of. That we've seen nowadays with social media that it's so easy to get mobs. So easy to get mobs worked up. And if India loses, there'll be mob action against our cricket players at that point of time. They will turn on them in an instant. You know, whoever gets a zero, whoever it is, they'll turn on. And this is not the way that these cricket players, no professional should have to play as a surrogate for war. as a surrogate for showing them their right place. This is not the way that sports should be played. That is important. That is where I think sports should be distinguished from politics. Sports is not a way for settling political scores. Yes, sports is political, but it's not a surrogate for war. That is an important thing. And I'm this kind of talk from Sachin is what's extremely disappointing, because again, Sachin is Sachin. People hear him. I think they shouldn't, but they do. And I say this as a Sachin fan, but I'm a fan purely of Sachin's cricketing abilities, not his captaincy, and definitely not his life outside cricket, in the sense how he is, from his Ferrari to everything, how he has kind of, you know, been in the public eye. I kind of felt that I expected a bit more from him. That you know, at the end, if his legacy is there going to be the same as, let's say, Ravi Shastri's in terms of what they did outside the world of sports, then that would be a little bit disappointing for me. I'd say that as a Sachin Tendulkar fan. So that's enough follow-up for today from the last episode. And again, there's so much to say about this, and given all the drama and given the developing story that's going on. So I want to go on to the next topic for today, yep. which is the Cobra Post thing. Now, of course, any story that has Shakti Kapoor in it will have to be covered on this podcast. I think all of us know that this is a maxim that I intend to obey, that all Shakti Kapoor news, no matter how trivial, shall be covered here, because it's very important. For those of you who don't know, Shakti Kapoor is an old favorite of mine as a lover of bad Bollywood movies from the 90s. I don't think that you can love Bollywood of the 90s without loving Shakti Kapoor, with all his Laja Babu Togya thing about him. And first of all, before we get to Cobra Post, first of all, how many times is Shakti Kapoor going to get stung? I mean, as I tweeted, he gets stung more than a beekeeper. I mean, how many times has this guy been stung? As one of my friends pointed out, I think Shakti Kapoor should, next time his sting operation would be, how much are you willing to pay me in order to pretend to be stung? That should be his next thing. So I think the larger point is what Cobra Post is trying to do. And it's been trying to do it for a long time. The attack is never really on the people being attacked. It's always on BJP. They pretend to be from BJP. So what they're trying to convey is that BJP is buying people. Okay, so even though nominally the gun is trained on a Shakti Kapoor or a Rakhi Sawant, the attack really is on BJP. And I've gone through pretty much all of their videos, and none of them are exceptional in any ways, except a few things which from here to there, which I noticed, like the way Mahima Chaudhary is speaking. I think the only time they went up, if I recall, was for Tiska Chopra. It's sad because among all the stars that I saw, the only person I've ever interacted with in person is Tiska Chopra, and she's a very, very nice person. So it was sad to, you know, see her there, sad to see her caught in the sting. And, you know, sad for, you know, whatever implications that had. I don't think anybody's... So I'm getting ahead of myself. First, let's talk about Cobra Post. So Cobra Post, only for Tiska Chopra, they pretended to be AAP, if I recall correctly. For everybody else, they pretended to be BJP. I possibly haven't seen one or two. But predominantly, they pretend to be BJP. And the attack is really on the BJP, because they are trying to confirm... They're basically, in the public mind, they're trying to bolt on this impression that BJP is buying everything. This is a standard conspiracy theory. I think all parties have this conspiracy theory that the other party is buying people. So, and it happens. There's no doubt that it doesn't happen. And it's also true that some parties are buying people, and perhaps all parties are buying people. But as to how pervasive it is and what are the currencies of buying, that perhaps is open to conjecture. So, you would notice that one of the persons who was stung is Vivek Oberoi. Did you see the video of Vivek Oberoi?
Vikram? No, I've not been following the story at all.
Okay, you haven't been following. You should follow the story because it's interesting. It's interesting for reasons other than what you see.
I'm sure. I would love to be in the pitch meeting for this, though. I mean, how did these people even pitch to their management saying, you know what, we want to sting Shakti Kapoor? And how did they even choose these people?
So we are coming to that. So the reason they chose... So first of all, let's talk about Vivek Oberoi. So why is Vivek Oberoi in this sting? Why not anybody else? So it's very obvious why Vivek Oberoi is in this sting. Because he's playing Narendra Modi. So you would... So the impression that they're trying to convey over here, that that's the larger narrative, is that Vivek Oberoi has been bought. In a way, he has. I mean, I'm sure he's taking money to do that movie. That's his job. But they're trying to show what they're trying to show. And this is something which is going on. It's a campaign. This is not just an isolated shot in the dark. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to bring Vivek Oberoi down. Now, to be honest, Vivek Oberoi does a very good job of bringing himself down, okay, by acting in all these sex comedies and in Inside Edge, which is possibly the hammiest performance. Vivek Oberoi is a moderately talented actor. I've liked him in some of his earlier movies. So
Company was good.
Yeah. So he's it's not that he can't act, but unfortunately he's taken a number of wrong choices in his career, starting from that one press conference he did many years ago. But after that, his career has gone on a downward spiral. And he's responsible for that part. Whether it being playing that villain in Krish 3, the Kaal or something. So he's done, Vivek Oberoi is his biggest enemy, really. And that extra I in his first name hasn't helped, in case he's been following the spelling of his first name.
Vivek Anand Oberoi right now.
He's Vivek Anand Oberoi. So adding another name, bringing in another vowel, nothing has worked for him. Okay. If just bringing a vowel would have worked, I'm sure Uday Chopra would have done it many years before. So vowels don't work. But the fact is that the right now they're going after Vivek Oberoi because he's playing Narendra Modi. And if you say, oh, that's not true. Okay. Let's look at this some video that has been circulating on Twitter on Kangana now driving riding a horse. Have you seen that video, Vikram?
Yeah, and I tweeted about it. I just don't understand the reason why it's supposed to.
Exactly. So this has been leaked deliberately to humiliate Kangana because she has been speaking in favor of Modi. So you see the pattern that's coming out here. Now just take a look back. You know, she is riding this. That's exactly the way horses are filmed, okay? Because
yeah, I don't see what am I supposed to get outraged about or...
Yeah, you're supposed to laugh. You're supposed to laugh because it's part of a meme, right? You know, if you look at it, this is what Modi promised. And now if you take a step back, oh, look, this horse doesn't exist. So for those of you who don't know, do you know what is the problem with... So let me tell you a story about why you never shoot with horses as an example. So many years ago, I took a one-day comedy writing class from a guy whose name this is a senior moment, I can't, but I think Richard Zweibel was his name. So he was, again, he's not a famous guy, but he was a writer on Saturday Night Live. Okay. And he actually appears on one of Larry David's. So he's a very big friend of Larry David. And he's a very, very down-to-earth guy. Very down-to-earth guy. You wouldn't believe, talking that this guy was like a 10, 15 years he used to write for SNL. His like best friend is Larry David. And he had some great stories about Larry David. But this is the story was that he was talking about like how, about what comic genius is. So he was talking about, again, one of the cast members of Saturday Night Live. These are very old cast members, like in the early 80s. So she, again, I don't remember her name. She wasn't there for many years, but so he was saying that, he gave this is a very interesting story was that week there was some story about a horse. And so one of the Saturday Night Live decided, let's bring the horse and let's do a skit with the horse. And as you know, the Saturday Night Live is taped live. So they brought in a horse without doing any kind of rehearsal. Okay. And he said that what we didn't know was the horse was very docile. So we brought him in. We did some rehearsals with the horse. We did one rehearsal with the horse. And that there was nothing wrong with the horse. But the moment that red light went on the camera, apparently we're flashing red light to a horse is a sign to bolt. That horse just berserk in that set and just started galloping. And his story was that this person, this lady who was in the skit, it was a live audience, and the horse had started, like, this was not supposed to happen. So while the horse was galloping, she made the skit as if she was a commentator on the horse galloping. So she totally changed the skit online. And she was changing it as the horse was running in different places and doing different things. And people thought this was prepared. It wasn't. The horse wasn't supposed to run. But the point again is that horses are notoriously difficult to work with on camera. So it's entirely, entirely de rigueur to see, you know, for what happened there. And the fact that they're using this, and I'm not no big fan of Kangana Ranaut, by the way, but the fact that they're using this to bring her down just goes to show that the Congress IT cell has now decided that they will go after anybody who associates with BJP. Of course, the bigger the target, the more support they will get. And that they're willing to not just try to destroy their careers. I mean, it's easy to destroy the career of Vivek Oberoi because he has none. But with Kangana, that's not the case. Kangana, you know, she might not be as hot as she was in terms of her market value 2 or 3 years ago, with a few of her movies failing, with some, you know, word getting out about, you know, some of difficulties in working with her. But she's still a very, you know, she's still a very sellable and bankable star who can make movies on her own. And she doesn't need she's a one-person shop, really. And just this attempt to bring her down by showing something which is, you know, is what's expected. She's not going to ride an actual horse. I mean, this is like, this is like all the Marvel movie stunts, everything happens in front of a green screen. Now, if you just take that shot and say, ha, 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 look at Iron Man here. There's no Thanos. He's just, you know, acting in front of a green screen. Yeah, that's exactly how things are shot. So this Cobra post has to be seen, this expose has to be seen in that backdrop. So first of all, their main thing is not to go after actors. So the actors are all easy bait here. So who do they go after? They go after reality show stars whose stars have set in a way. So Sambhavna Seth, Rakhi Sawant, Shakti Kapoor. I mean, these people aren't even A-list reality show stars in this day and age. So of course, these people, and many of them, they don't have seats. They don't go after any of the big stars, by the way, because they would never be able to get through the number of minders and secretaries they have. So they get to stars who are so bereft of resources that they meet people themselves. So that's why Mahima Chaudhary. Why Mahima Chaudhary of all people? Okay. I don't know. I mean, fan of Dharkan, maybe? I don't know. Why Mahima Chaudhary? So they deliberately go after the easy.
The Ganga Link.
Yeah.
Modi.
And they go after three people who acted in Mahabharat, for crying out loud. I mean, that's where they're going. These guys were in Mahabharat. That's, you know, what connects Puneet Isar, then the guy who played Drone, again, I can't remember his name, and Pankaj Dheer, okay, played Karna. So they are going after, it's so obvious what the real game behind this so-called sting operation is. You see, Vidya Balan, she didn't go for the bait because she's an A-lister. That's why. Because they weren't even, they were not even, that's why they didn't even have a video of her so far. Because they weren't even able to get to her. I mean, people like those would be filtered out. Now, here's the big thing. From a perspective, and so from a perspective of the Shakti Kapoors and Rakhi Sawants of the world, this is the way promotions work. This is the way PR works. So for them, again, many of them asked for money in black, which again, all of us know that all of them take money like that itself. So even that is fairly standard practice. Ye white mein thoda do, black mein thoda do. So that again, are we trying to pretend that we don't know that they take money in black, and that the film industry works on, you know, doesn't work on a system of 100% white payments like people with a salary? Is that the new fact that the Cobra Post is pretending to tell us? No, what they're trying to do is they're trying to, first of all, they're going for very easy targets. And in within that target, they're kind of throwing in their real targets, which are people who are perceived to be close to Modi or people who are perceived to be close to, you know, acting in Hindu serials. So that's what they're really going for. So even their choice of second-rate, third-rate has-beens isn't a random choice. And that's really, really sad that these people are being lionized by the sections of the media. I mean, why doesn't Cobra Post go after, you know, the big stars? Let's see where things roll. Because they can't. They can't go after the big stars. So, and that's not really their aim. Their aim isn't to bring down a big star. Their aim is to essentially spit at BJP. So which raises the question, why? And I think the answer is in their own sting. Why? Now, this is the way PR works. And you see, I know this because this is a personal thing to me. When I was writing books and, you know, seriously trying to make a 24/7 career of writing books, this was what I was told that I would have to do, that I would have to hire PR firms like this fictitious PR firms who would then go to not Vivek Oberoi, but yes, even to second-rate, third-rate stars, because that was what my media budget would be. I would not be able to buy A-grade stars. But to get them to tweet something in favor of my book, or to get suddenly walking in the street to have the paparazzi take a picture with them holding my book. That's the way things work in this day and age. I mean, don't people know this? If they don't know, I'm telling you, this is the way things work. That's why for none of them, for all these stars, they didn't think they were doing anything wrong. Because this is the way promotions work nowadays. This is the way guerrilla campaigns or whatever they call it work. That, you know, you don't really say you're advertising it. You kind of subtly promote the product. This is nothing which is... And that's really what PR does. And PR not just does it for celebrities. That's how they do it with media people. That's how they do it with books. I mean, forget political parties where they're talking about 1 crore a month. Okay, think about the world of books where we're talking about, you know, 10 rupees. Oh, I'm kidding. But that's really the level that I'm talking about. So there also, the conversations are like that. So there are campaigns that PR people, that PR firms sell. And this is the way these things work, is that, and there's nothing really illegal about this. Now you can say, well, why aren't there this? There's no conflict of interest also. And if you ask these people, and I agree, there are far more egregious cases of conflict of interests that abound that people don't seem to care about. So if some star, if Sonu Sood decides to, you know, promote, and this was really, Sonu Sood decides to promote, you know, some kind of good initiative of the Narendra Modi government, and in return, he's getting paid. I don't think anybody would consider that to be a bad thing, because mind you, the way these guys, Cobra Post, do this thing, they keep on repeatedly saying, look, we are not going to ask you to attack anyone. Why were they saying that? They were saying that because they knew that if they said that, oh, you will have to attack somebody, all of these people would back out. Do you know why? Because these people are at the lowest end of the food chain. They don't want to piss anyone off. Because they know that the politics of the big guys in Bollywood are all against BJP. The guys who really have the money. The guys who bring the people out into the theaters. Nobody wants to piss them off. Vivek Oberoi knows what happens when you piss one of them off and what happens to your career after that. So none of those. So that's why they keep on hammering the fact, we will not ask you to do anything negative. There will be nothing negative. You'll only have to promote positive messages about the government. And if you present it like that to anybody, they'll say, yeah, sure, why not? Why not? I'm presenting something positive. I'm not attacking anyone. And I'm getting paid for it. Of course, anything that comes out of my tweet, Twitter account is it's expected that people know that these are paid tweets. Nobody will write at the bottom, this is a paid tweet. They don't do it for any of the other products, by the way. So when you see somebody, you know, so-and-so star attending the opening of so-and-so function, do you think she just walks in there and say, oh, what should I do? Oh, let me go and attend this person's. No, that person's being paid to attend. Everybody who goes there and shows up, their pictures are being taken. I mean, majority of them are being paid to attend. That's how they make the money. That's how the people that Cobra Post stung, you know, people who were perhaps had some potential to become stars in the year 2000s, that's how they make their money. They make their money through appearances. They're asked to appear at corporate events. They're asked to come to corporate events, stand in front of the mic. There will be, you know, news reporters saying, sir, aapko kya, aapka kya kehna hai? And they'll say, I've come here to support a friend. She's opening this, whatever. And again, they don't say, I've been paid to say this. Nobody says that. And that's understood. So to turn around and call them crooks, that's absolutely unfair. Because none of them are being crooks. Yes, taking money in the black, yeah. But to promote positive messages for money without mentioning in the tweet that I am doing this for money is absolutely the way everything else happens. So why should it be different for political parties? Again, as I said, the intent, the attack intent was never really those people. They were unfortunately caught in this crossfire, and the real target is BJP. And it's which begs the question, why is Cobra Post doing it? So that's it for today. And so please keep on sending your feedback. Please keep on subscribing to the podcast. For those of you who haven't, if you subscribe through podcast app of your choice, please rate the podcast on the app. That really helps. If you can write a review, that's even better. And if you contribute to my Patreon, why, that's even better. So please keep supporting this podcast. And over to you, Vikram.
Yep, that's pretty much our podcast for today. And the Patreon account, which Arnab was talking about, you can find it at patreon.com/greatbong. So please do support it. And I think, yeah, you can send in your feedback to us at appodcast@talkingstuff.net. And we have been getting a lot of comments from WhatsApp, so please keep them coming. And as you know, you can also send in voice messages on WhatsApp. I'll try to play them in directly during the show to Arnab. So the WhatsApp number is 96525-7883. Remember, if you're outside India, you need to add a +91 as a country code for India. That's it for now, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.